BJSF 90.1 FM, broadcasting live from Burnaby Mountain, Burnaby, BC.
From the Netherlands, this is the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Today, the heat beneath our feet, harvesting and recharging it to heat and cool buildings without heating Earth's atmosphere. And the wind blows, the sun shines, rivers flow. Wherever they flow into salty seas, power can be generated just like that. This is the Green Planet Monitor. I'm David Kattenberg. Each year, fossil fuel burning sends 37 billion metric tons of carbon dioxide into Earth's atmosphere. A little over a tenth of those emissions, 4 billion tons, are associated with heating air and water in houses and buildings. So clean ways to generate heat are in hot demand. Low-power pumps transfer heat from air to water and air to air. Then there's geothermal energy, piping hot water from beneath Earth's surface, using it to heat buildings. At the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands, two pipes are now being bored 2.5 kilometers down. A doublet, that's called. 75-degree water filled with natural gas will be pumped up, the gas tapped, and the hot water used to heat campus buildings. Slightly cooler now, 50 degrees, that water will be sent through a grid to surrounding homes, then pumped back down again. Total output, once the system is up and running, 8 megawatts of thermal energy. There are about 20 geothermal doublets around the Netherlands today. That could expand to 75 by the end of this year and up to 700 by 2050, at which point the Netherlands aims to be CO2 emissions free. The GPM spoke about the Delft geothermal project with Hemmo Abels. Abels is a geologist at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands.
People are looking for sustainable energy, and the subsurface is one of the key sources. Hey, you see in the Netherlands that there is quite a public resistance growing towards windmills, solar panel farms.
Is there?
Yeah, because it uses space. I mean, people see the windmills, and if you work in the subsurface, you see after the now you see a big construction, but after the project, there's just two pipes basically coming out of the subsurface, and the rest is underground or in this building here next door where the heat exchangers are. So what you hear now, we see a drilling rig that's around 45 meters high, and we are drilling down to 2.5 kilometers, two deviated wells. One well is already finished, it goes to the east, it's 3 kilometers long and it's around a kilometer to the site. And the other well going north, also around a kilometer deviated. So at depth, they are 1.5 kilometer apart, the two wells. And what we're doing is we want to produce hot water, as I said, 75 to 80 degrees water from the formation at that depth, and then cool it down here, take the heat out in this building in the back of it, and then bring the colder water back into the subsurface. And then in the subsurface, the two wells are communicating. In the back of us here, that's actually very interesting. We see this building here, this is from the 50s. And in the top here, those are coal hoppers. That's where coal used to be brought in. And then the campus was heated with coal. And then somewhere in the 70s, that was transformed to methane. So to gas, natural gas, and we hope in 2 years' time it will be all on sustainable heat from the subsurface, so on water.
This one building and lots of other buildings around campus.
Well, this is only the building to produce the heat, and it has been produced here since the 50s, using coal first and methane now, and it will be heating the whole campus. Not the newest buildings, because the newest buildings are very well insulated and so they are heated at low temperatures, but the older buildings we have are not so insulated, and they are heated by at higher temperatures. So we can heat those. And the rest of the heat we bring to older buildings around in the city of Delft, where also higher energy heat is needed to heat them.
You're drilling now. When is it going to be complete? And when it's complete, what will you be... tell me about what you're planning on using this geothermal energy to heat.
Yeah, so we're drilling now. So we're drilling to 2.1 kilometers, a dublet system, where we retrieve hot water, a brine, in fact. So it's salt water that comes up. So there is heat exchangers at surface, and we send back to the same formation the same water that's cooled down. So we take out the heat and the gas that's in there, and then we pump the water back into the same formation. So it's a closed system in that sense. And we, with the heat, we want to heat the campus buildings of the university, and outside 5,000 to 10,000 houses of the city of Delft will be heated with that.
Which would save how much energy in terms of consumption of...
Yeah, I think it is 25 megawatt of energy. That's the whole system worth. In summertime, so you have a lot of months where you produce too much heat, because the heat demand of buildings is really focused on winter times and parts of the spring and parts of the fall. And then there's a lot of time where there's little heat demand and the well can still produce a lot of heat, the same amount of heat, of course. While in peak winter times, when it's really cold, then there is too much heat demand for the well. So what we also try to do is next summer we will drill a whole set of extra less deep wells to 250 meters, where we will store the excess heat from the summertime for the peak moments of heat demand in winter.
You can actually heat up those aquifers.
Exactly. We heat up the shallow systems, the shallow aquifers. Also there we do a lot of research into how we can optimally do that, because such systems are normally not so efficient. Maybe you lose half of the heat that you pump in. So of course we want to optimize that to lose less, make it more efficient. So there is also a whole research component into that system. So something that's really needed is that there is more data gathering along with projects, because what you can see in sustainable energy, that the margins are slim, and particularly these are low entropy systems.
So meaning low heat.
Low heat, yeah, exactly.
Low heat. Low enthalpy.
Low enthalpy means low heat systems. So economically, if you have a barrel of water of 75 degrees, well, if you wait too long, it's cold. So your money is gone. Eh? So it is very difficult to make an economic margin on a barrel of water. And it's much easier to make an economic margin on a barrel of oil, because if you wait and the prices go up, you can sell it. And if the prices go down, you wait and you sell it later. So to make money with sustainable heat, with this kind of systems, is very difficult. So normally those companies, they gather as the minimal data possible, because data gathering is expensive. But it also means from each project, we learn little. And we it's difficult to optimize these systems because we have little knowledge, and we learn little because the companies don't want to invest in data gathering. So,
and here we're talking about data on the subsurface, geology.
On the subsurface, but also on everything at surface, on scaling, on pumping, on pumps, and etc. These are all relatively new to a lot of engineers, but also there is little investments in science, in research into these kind of systems, because there is little money. Yeah, so it's good that the government is really boosting this now, or at least making money available to get more data and to get more science going, because we really need to, if we want the energy transition to really go faster and we want to move away from fossil energy, we really need a big boost of these systems. From multiple sides, it's a win-win, because it is a source of energy that we have in the first place. So if there is a energy crisis, prices go up, it is also economically worth it to invest in geothermal energy And we have the climate crisis. So we really need to change from fossil fuels to sustainable sources. And, well, so in that sense, it's a win-win.
Hemmo Abels is a geologist at the Technical University of Delft in the Netherlands. For more information about the Delft University geothermal project, go to greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep delivering stories about planet Earth, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Side of the ocean, in Canada's largest city, Canada's largest university is exploring another way to harvest the heat beneath our feet. Geo Exchange, it's called, in a cavernous room beneath historic King's College Circle at the St. George campus of the University of Toronto. Surface water is piped through a network of 370 boreholes, 250 meters down into warm limestone rock, then back up again. In the winter, that subsurface water is used to heat campus buildings. In the summer, heat exchangers send surface heat back into the pipes, dispatching warmed water back down again, turning subsurface rock into a thermal battery while cooling campus buildings. Canada's largest urban geo-exchange facility is more than just a heating and cooling system. It's an educational display and a bit of an art installation, an astounding maze of multicolored pipes for students, faculty, and campus visitors to marvel at through glass windows on their way to the campus's underground parking garage, equipped with electric car chargers. It's also a subterranean classroom, a mechanical engineering dream students can study and be inspired by. The GPM visited the U of T's Geo Exchange facility last November, buried beneath King's College Circle. Where are we going?
We are going deep beneath the King's College Circle, underneath the campus of King's College Circle, here at the St. George campus of the University of Toronto. And we're going underground here to actually show our GeoExchange educational display and the GeoExchange system itself. It is basically one level below our beautiful campus called King's College Circle.
Can you introduce yourself? Tell me who you are.
Sure. My name is Scott Hendershot. I'm the Senior Manager of the Sustainability Office here at the University of Toronto.
Catherine Thorne, Director of Sustainability and Energy Management.
Wow.
That's what you were hoping for.
This is impressive. I'm a guy who loves rooms filled with pipes.
Right,
colorful
exactly.
Colorful pipes. What is this?
So what you're seeing in front of you is what we're calling our experiential learning, our educational display that we've installed in the entrance here to our parking garage, which sits atop the GeoExchange system. What you see in front of you are actually two windows that look into the mechanical room, which you'll see with many, many colored pipes that are designed to educate our students and, for that matter, the larger public when they come into this space to get a sense of what is going on here with our GeoExchange system. What we're doing is we're actually looking directly north through our mechanical room, and it runs the entire length of the parking garage. Parking garage, 240-odd spots, so it's about 150 meters straight up. And what you'll see in front of you is basically some red pipes that kind of go down underground. They actually connect horizontal pipes that connect to our vertical GeoExchange wells themselves. So this is kind of the epicenter, the heart, if you will, of the mechanical portion of this GeoExchange system. Everything comes up here and ends up getting connected to the buildings through various pumps and heat exchangers, etc. So this is a very, very interesting view to see the sense of scale of the size of this mechanical room.
And this is like right beneath King's College Circle.
It's directly beneath the very large iconic grass area that has been here for over 100 years. Now it is the roof on top of this GeoExchange system. And the students up top still get to experience the landscape that we've created, that we've recreated. But now they're sitting atop a very, very large GeoExchange system.
What's the difference between geo exchange and geothermal?
There's a lot of confusion about the difference between these terms, geoexchange and geothermal. Geoexchange here in North America was actually a term created to differentiate from power produced from geothermal energy. So instead of producing power from geothermal energy here, we're heating and cooling buildings from geothermal energy, and we call that geoexchange.
But you're gonna explain to me how this works technically. You're not actually plunging pipes deep down into the 2-3 kilometers down and pulling up hot water. You're not doing that.
That's correct. What we're doing is we have about 370 boreholes into which we've put U-shaped pipes that carry water in a continuous loop through the pipes, which are able to then take heat to and from the ground that we can then supply to the buildings.
And so how far down are you sending these pipes?
250 meters, not kilometers.
Right, so this is very shallow geothermal heat exploitation. It's very shallow.
It is shallow, yes, and that makes it very effective for heating and cooling buildings as opposed to power production.
But are you pulling heat up from 250 meters down, or what are you doing? How is the heat? Is this hot water that's moving, or is it hot air?
It's water. So we take water and put it through the pipes, through the ground. It collects some heat, and then we are able to use that to heat the buildings in the winter. But the key is, with a shallow geoexchange system like this, we are then in the summer using it for air conditioning. So it actually acts like a thermal battery, where in the winter we're putting heat into the buildings and taking it out of the ground. In the summer, we're actually taking the heat out of the buildings and putting it back into the ground so that we can air condition the buildings and be able to complete the cycle again the next year.
And the water, where's the water coming from? Like, you're moving water up and down. Where's the water coming from?
It's a continuous loop. So we fill it once, and then we don't actually inject it into the ground. It stays in the pipes. So it continuously circulates. We don't lose water.
So this is water that you're pulling out from the surface, from piping?
Yes, yeah. Wherever you'd get your water normally.
Do people go in there? Is it possible to go in there?
So this is the great thing about the design of the geoexchange system. What you're seeing here, we have windows into the mechanical room, and we have designed this mechanical room to actually have space. You can actually see it, not for your listeners, but you can see behind here, we actually have space for experiential learning, or actually classroom, for students to actually go in and physically see the pumps, the heat exchangers, the piping, etc. So this is a bit of a mechanical engineering dream, right? And so we wanted to make sure that when we built this system, it wasn't just a mechanical room to support the system operation. Students could actually go in with their professors. We can do tours inside this actual space itself. So it's a mechanical room / classroom. And that's just right in line, of course, with our teaching mission, of course. We want to make sure that we educate and empower our students, especially when it comes to sustainability in this case.
Can you tell me a bit about the history of this project, how it began, what the idea was?
Sure. What's so interesting about the University of Toronto is that we're very old and we're very large. So if you think about it from a campus size perspective, over 80,000 population typically on a typical day at this campus. And we have more students, where I have more students than any other single campus in North America. So we're very, very large. But on top of that, we're old. So we look at our buildings, 80 to 120 years old. And we look at our district energy system that supplies over 75 of our buildings, okay, is very, very old. It's been there. But so how do you take that uses a fair amount of natural gas to heat and to take care of, basically condition our buildings, it's a big greenhouse gas emitter. How do you take that, keep your heritage, and yet reduce your greenhouse gases? Well, what we decided to do is, well, U of C's mission, that sounds perfectly aligned with our research and teaching mission. So what are we going to do? What we ended up coming up with was our climate positive strategy that we released in 2021.
That's the University of Toronto's
overall climate strategy. And the first project that actually is action based upon that plan is called Project LEAP, and it's called our Low Emissions Accelerator Project, which includes this geoexchange, where we're actually tying into this piece to be able to drastically decarbonize our campus in 3 years. And the key is that the geoexchange is a piece of that. So there's so many pieces that kind of come together. This is one piece of a larger decarbonization project.
And decarbonizing the campus, like what does that mean? Does that mean reaching zero net emissions? Or?
Our climate positive plan is actually designed to do better than that. So we note climate positive as being better than carbon neutral. So in other words, emit actually less than we need. So the notion is creating a carbon sink eventually. Our target for that is 2050. We're doing our best to actually bring that forward. So we feel that carbon neutrality is not good enough, and we have to do better than that.
How does the University of Toronto actually become a carbon sink?
So if you can imagine, we have a certain amount of greenhouse gases. If we can get that number down to zero, and let's say we install 1, 2, 10, 20 more solar panels that create renewable energy for the grid, we are effectively, from a calculation perspective, becoming a carbon sink because we're offering cleaner energy to the grid that we don't need to make ourselves carbon neutral.
And this system, when did you start constructing it? How long did it take to build all this? And is it now fully operational?
Yeah, so we actually started the build in roughly 2018, 2019. So it's about a four-year build right now. The GeoExchange system is now it's basically up and running. It's operational. But the good news story is that we're already back under construction. You actually see a banner here. I mentioned that Project Leap. We're taking the opportunity to take full capacity and use of the GeoExchange field, because when we originally designed this to run today, on we'll call this day one, only 25% of the capacity of this field was going to be used, and that's what we had the financing for. With this new Project Leap, as part of our climate positive plan or aggressive strategy, we're actually enabling this entire system, 100% of the system, to be used. It's going to take a few more years of construction, but when it's done, the entire system will be in full capacity. But as far as operation of the GeoExchange, it works now, but we're back under construction to make it even better.
And so when it's fully operational, you'll be heating all the buildings and heating and cooling buildings?
Not all the building. It's one element that will be connected, because when I was mentioning earlier about Project Leap, the GeoExchange is part of it. We are also retrofitting our central steam plant that uses primarily natural gas. Four very large boilers as part of Project Leap are removing one of those boilers and putting two electrics in, plus some additional heat pump capacity. Plus, we're also retrofitting some of our high energy consuming buildings to reduce their consumption to pay for that additional electricity. So if you look at all of that together, we are able to impact quite a few buildings around the campus, not every single one, but the 30 plus buildings that are connected to the GeoExchange system now, plus the over 75 buildings that are connected to our total district energy system, will all see the benefit, either directly or indirectly.
And there's water now moving through these pipes.
It's actually paused right now. You'll actually see folks inside the room that we're looking at now with construction hats on, because we're actually in the process of upgrading the system. So there was, but as it stands, we've put a pause on it to make it even better.
And here we see a color coding system here, where all the different pipes are colored differently and.
Yeah, this was actually the color coding that you see here was actually designed in to the system, such that any passerby that comes through this to go into the parking lot to understand that they're not just going into a parking lot, they're going on top of Canada's largest urban GeoExchange system. And to have this color coding gives a sense of, if someone's interested in understanding how this works, they can self-educate, right? At the same time, we of course do more detailed tours. So the point was, we want to make sure that people are aware that this can be done, and maybe more importantly, that others can do the same.
Does this fit into the strategy of the province of Ontario, the federal decarbonization strategy? Well, what sort of support and interaction is there with those folks?
I mentioned that Project Leap, which is a larger project that this fits into, and that is actually being supported through financing from the Canada Infrastructure Bank. We're also working with the Independent Electricity System Operator here in Ontario, and it's aligned with the climate action that our governments have wanted to support. So we've been able to achieve our objectives while working with others to help them achieve theirs.
Hmm. And what do students say when they come down here? I mean, interesting that people are walking by all the time, and of course it's kind of like a museum here, where
That's right.
There are panels, information panels that explain how it all works?
When we talk to students, one of the things we like to point out to them, we want them to come down to see this, and we've done, as you can imagine, countless tours since we opened up this display. And generally speaking, it was a very similar reaction that you had. It was like, wow. And it's a little bit of pride. I would say actually a lot of pride, because there's two things about the University of Toronto. This piece is very exciting from an engineering perspective, from a decarbonization perspective. But when the students, we have been ranked number one for sustainability by QS last year in 2024, and we're actually awaiting the ranking this year.
By whom? So,
by the QS ranking system, okay? It's a very common higher education ranking system. We actually have been trading places with UC Berkeley for the last few years. But when we mentioned that to students, I've done this in presentations to students, they literally stand up and give a standing ovation. They're so proud of being at a university that's taking this so seriously.
You asked about the colored pipes earlier. That really helps with explaining to students how the system works. And as the University of Toronto, teaching is one of our core missions. So we're actually working with university professors to help teach students through this project as well.
And run through these colors for me. Like I'm seeing a few things like snow melt and storm water. I mean, there's a lot of water. It rains, as Earth warms. We're getting heavier and heavier extreme rain events. And, I remember some years ago, people were moving around Toronto in little boats.
Exactly.
It was flooding.
This is true.
And so we can use that water.
It's not for the system in itself. It's certainly part of our stormwater management system, but because this is a mechanical room, it's got a number of different pipes that go through it. You mentioned snowmelt, right? So we're actually using this geo-exchange heat to be able to melt some of the entrances to our buildings, so we don't have to use salt, for example, right? So that's part of the use of this system. But most of the pipes are for the geo-exchange system itself, where we're sending the heat down and bringing it back up. But you also see, for example, steam. You see a yellow steam pipe there. That's just because that's connected to our district energy system. We use that mechanical room to kind of make those connections. So it's a very complex system when you're looking at such a large campus with such an extensive district energy system. This is just kind of meant to give a sense of all the different pipes and such that are involved in the process.
And is the heat exchange just happening, like the cooling and the heating happening just on campus? Or will you reach a capacity at some point where you'll be sharing that capacity with the surrounding neighborhoods here in Toronto? Do you have that capacity?
This system is meant to support our campus. It is tied into our district system, and our larger district system and part of Climate Positive is that it does also feed some affiliate buildings.
Buildings off campus?
Yes, for example, the Royal Ontario Museum,
yes.
Right, is one example of we actually provide heat and electricity to that museum. It's off campus, but we actually support. So when they're connected to our system, if we become less greenhouse gas intensive, they do by proxy as well.
But in terms of impact to buildings outside of our campus, I mentioned our teaching mission. We also have a research mission, and we believe climate change is one of the most important challenges of our time. So we want to lead by example. That means not just doing the right thing, but also sharing those best practices for others so that they can do it too. So it goes beyond actually connecting buildings, but actually teaching others how to do this in Toronto and beyond throughout Canada and the world, really.
So it's a demonstration site.
It really is. And what's so interesting is that this goes back. The research when it comes to this particular technology goes back to the 1940s. There's a professor here at U of T, we actually just lost him in 2021, Professor Frank Hooper, who had pioneered this technology in this climate up here in Canada, back to the 1940s. So as you can imagine, I'm sure he is very much smiling seeing it's actually in reality here at his campus. The technology came from the University of Toronto. So when we're talking about connection to the research and connection to the students, it's a full circle. It's amazing.
Can you actually heat buildings in the winter, in the dead of winter here in Toronto, where it gets, not as cold as Winnipeg, but it gets chilly?
It really does, and the beauty of geo-exchange is that we'll take all that summer heat, we spend the entire summer season sending all that heat underground, right? As we said, 250 meters, by the way, that's half of a CN tower down. So although it's not deep, it's deep. The amazing thing is that we take all that summer heat and it's stored, right? So it's stored in that rock as a big thermal battery, as Catherine mentioned. And then in the winter, yes, we literally reverse the system, send cold water down, bring that very same heat that we saved in the summer back up to heat the buildings.
What kind of rock is that?
It's actually limestone. If you go deep enough, you can actually